Some gospel passages are easier to enter into than others. But this week, as I have been spending time with our text from Luke, I've spent actually a lot of time with that very first sentence. The apostles say to Jesus, "Increase our faith, Lord. Increase our faith." And it's one of those things that I never really think about why the apostles might struggle with that, because in so many ways, I mean, they were right there with Jesus, right? They were right there with their master, their teacher, day by day. Why was it hard for them to have faith? And then I remember their stories, pitching and rolling on that storming sea, or facing thousands of people who were hungry and not having very much to offer, or giving up everything, possessions, family, trade, giving up everything so that they could follow this teacher to who knows where. So this increase our faith, I understand. The Greek of it is actually very direct. It's like, add faith to us, as if they needed a transfusion of faith. Now, sometimes I think our English can lead us astray. Because faith in the Greek, it's this word pistis, and it also means commitment, confidence, trust. And it's this last understanding of trust that I'd like for us to spend some time with this morning. Have you had a time or times in your life when facing what was going on, you found it hard to trust in God? Has it happened recently? There are times when what we are facing is so much more than we think we've got. And so the disciples, they say to Jesus, increase our faith, increase our trust. And how does Jesus respond? He responds with this crazy statement. If you had faith, if you had trust the size of a mustard seed, you could say to that mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea. Now, sometimes when I read these Gospels, I remember that of communication, the words we use are actually only about 10%. 90% is in body language, and tone, and pitch, and pace. And we've got none of that. And so I'm wondering, what was Jesus' tone here? Was he stern? Was he sarcastic? Was he imploring? Like, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could say to that mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea. Have you ever seen a mustard seed from a mustard plant in the Middle East? It is this big. It's the size of a grain of sand. So what would it mean if the trust in God that we needed was like a tiny seed that had tree-like potential. Well, one answer for me comes in the first reading we heard today. It's from this lesser-known prophet, Habakkuk. It's the only time we're going to hear this story out of our Bible. And so you may want to know that Habakkuk lived in the 6th century BCE, and things were falling apart, right? You hear violence and destruction and strife and contention. It was societal collapse. And so, like those disciples, Habakkuk was calling out to God, in this case, "How long, O Lord? Do you not see this? This is not what you wish. How long?" We don't get it in the reading you heard, but in between, the answer from God is not the one that the prophet wants to hear, because God says, "Yes, this is bad, and it is so bad, I am sending the Chaldeans in, and it will be worse." And it was. And at this point, it's, you know, the wicked surround the righteous. And I was reading this week about one commentator, one scholar was looking at this, and he wrote something that just kind of stopped me in my tracks, because it resonated so clearly for the current cultural times we are in, the coursing in our society, this presidential election. And he writes that wickedness knows nothing of trust. Wickedness knows nothing of trust. And I thought, yes. Yes, because when I act from a place of wickedness, when we act from a place of wickedness, I must get mine before they get theirs. I am not thinking about whether or not my neighbor has enough. I don't trust my neighbor. I don't trust those who gather around me. I don't trust anyone else but myself. Wickedness knows nothing of trust. And there's Habakkuk, seeing everything going down around him. And what does he do? He becomes like a watchman, standing on the ramparts, waiting. Waiting and trusting that this promise will be delivered. This past week, I was checking in with one of my best friends, because he has had a stretch of days that is among the most trying that he's ever had in his life. My friend Ollie is a priest. He leads an Episcopal parish in downtown Charlotte, North Carolina. And these last couple of weeks in Charlotte, North Carolina, well, they've been like few weeks that city has known. For the past week, the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, that prides itself on its politeness, the city of North Carolina that has this genteel sense of self, this pride that there had never been riots in the history of Charlotte, not during desegregation, not during busing. The city of Charlotte, North Carolina, that a place where the law had grown slack, had gotten numb so that it could not respond, so that justice could not prevail. Well, my friend Ollie said, 250 years has come due. It has been a trying time for the people of Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's been a trying time for my friend Ollie, because in addition to being the priest leading a congregation in downtown Charlotte as this all happens, Ollie's also a black man. And so these last couple of weeks, they have brought some feeling for Ollie as he has been in conversations with many. Feelings like pity and sadness, he says, for people who cannot break away from what they have been shaped into. And feelings like anger. Anger because he's in conversations with people who ask, you know, why did this need to happen? This didn't need to happen. Feelings of anger because he is tired of hearing the word that this was unfortunate. Unfortunate. Unfortunate, he says, like the times that I am profiled and disrespected. It is much more than unfortunate. Anger. Anger because this conversation, in many ways, hasn't happened until there was violence. Now, my friend Ollie, he does not support violence, right? In fact, it is against his religion. He shares the words of Martin King, who said that riots are the language of the unheard. And Ollie, like Dr. King, he knows that when you hold something down, when you hold it down for so long, it rises up with force. So he's had a lot of hard conversations these past couple weeks, but he's also had some conversations that were raw, that were honest, that were holy. Like when one of his parishioners who is white came to him and said, as a white person, what am I to do? And Ollie said, keep doing the right thing. Do it and keep doing it. And even when you are misjudged, even when you are labeled by people who don't even know you, like I have been misjudged and labeled by people who don't even know me all my life, keep doing it. Even when you get that just nasty feeling. So some have been able to be open and searching. Others have been closed, unwilling to see theirs or any other part in this. And so I asked Ollie, I said, so where are you putting your trust? I mean, in all this pain and sorrow and confusion, where are you putting your trust? And it was without hesitation. He said, I am putting my trust in God who heals and who makes things new. Because all these conversations I've had, even the ones that are hard, where I have my hope is because these conversations have not ended. People who had never understood the bias they bring into their lives are beginning to learn. And people are looking at the systems, what Paul of Tarsus would have called the powers and principalities, and they're seeing the bias that exists in these systems, and it is being exposed for all to see. Truths are being told, and they are being heard. and he is trusting in God because in the midst of the pain, there is catharsis. Now, I said Charlotte, but I could have said El Cajon, or just last night, Los Angeles, or Baton Rouge, or St. Paul, or Chicago, or New York, or Ferguson, or Oakland, or San Francisco. You may have read in the San Francisco Chronicle just yesterday, 50 years ago this week, it was 1966, when there was a young black man who was running away from the police. He was unarmed and was shot by a police officer from many, many yards away and killed. And riots erupted in parts of San Francisco. Right? And just as in Charlotte, with the killing of Keith Lamont Scott, it was about that killing, but it wasn't. You see, these roots are tangled and they go deep. So what are we to do? What's our work? So that gospel we heard, there are some words there about unworthiness, about slaves that do not help us get closer. But there is a version that Eugene Peterson uses in the Message when he says, know your work. What is your work to be done? Do your work. And at this point, I'm speaking specifically to people who are white like me. We need to do our work not for thanks, not for gratitude, but it's because it's our work to do. And our work, all of us, our work is going to be to have trust. To trust that God is real, that God desires justice, and that this long arc of justice is going to bend. We're going to need to trust that the ways that we suffer with another will be redemptive. We're going to need to trust that God is going to work in and through us, you and me. We're going to trust that we cannot do this alone. We're going to need to trust that this is our work together of healing, of reconciliation, of new life. Because when we do this work of trust, it is like that small seed, that very small seed of faith that can uproot that mulberry tree and plant it in the sea. And the good news today, friends, is that we need just this much faith.